off Ladies Mile, New York City. It is a stifling hot summer afternoon in 1895. Edwina and her mother, carrying parcels. They survey the empty room.
Over here, Edwina. We can look out the window while we dine. Come along, no dawdling now. This humidity is terrible. From all the strength I had to open that sticky restaurant door. Edwina, please be more careful. My, we can't take you anywhere, can we? You should only be a little bit more delicate in your movement. Why, you nearly crushed that poor sales clerk back in the sheet music department at Best and Company. No servers to pull out of the chairs. I hope the food here is not nearly as lax as the service. They are open all times of the day, not like 7 days a week. That's what the sign outside said. Perhaps it's busier by the times of the day or night. The jug of water is just as heavy as it is full. Dear, the dishes have not been cleared. I'll think twice about before visiting this establishment. But it is close to the streetcar. We'll be back home in Brooklyn before long. Do you want to sit in the window and gaze out upon the street? All finery, the lovely ladies, and the new piano sheet music. Edwina, how could you come here and sit? Looking out the window will do you good. Just sit. And we can watch the lovely, refined young ladies stroll past. Maybe you'll get some of an education as you watch them and take note of their posture and grace. Sit! What an ox you are, Edwina, my word. You'll never find a young man to court you if you plan on exhibiting those kinds of manners. Terrible manners. No wonder you hide in your bedroom all day and night and those terrible manners. To clear the table, I'll just have to do it myself. There may be a small gratuity left under the butter dish today. There. I have a nice clean place to enjoy my light meal. A nice kidney pie, I think, and a nice iced tea, and you know what, Edwina? I have been here before. I've dined here before with my second cousin a few years back, around Christmas time. My second cousin Harry from East Astoria, that dreadful village in the middle of nowhere. Queens, a miserable place. Swamps, mud. You remember her. Short, plump, not too bright. No one courting her back then, no suitor. A little like you are now, I believe. Just come up from 14th Street. A lovely piano recital with a lyric called The Days of Drawing In, and walked all the way up here. The wind was howling, the snow was piling up everywhere, and the rail cars were clattering away on 6th Avenue. I snuggled right up to Harry as we walked, both of us wrapped tight in her fur coat, singing Christmas carols. I told that my new housekeeper, Gertrude McGinty, would be waiting back home in Brooklyn, this fire shot with warm lights. Who knows where you were? Hidden away in your bedroom, no doubt. But Harry, as usual, wanted to stop and get a bite to eat, and eat and eat. We didn't get back home to Glendale for hours. Coming to Gertrude, sorry, for hours. The fire was out, the hot chocolate was cold, and Gertrude was asleep on the floor, tangled in our blankets, clutching her empty flask by the drunken sailor. Of course, I'd rather be with Harriet now, where she is out in the middle of nice, breezy nowhere in East Astoria, instead of in this suffering heat. She has trees and farmland all around her. And she and her husband can walk all the way down to Bowery Bay Beach. Edwina Huntington, leave those plates alone. The server will be here any minute. Just sit back and enjoy that overhead fan. This city gets hotter every summer, Edwina. Even Brooklyn is hot. Not at all like what it used to be. You're too young to remember, Edwina. But when I was a little girl, before you were born, so how could you remember? Well, that terrible war in the South. Go to the beach too. Pack up our big cooking pot early in the morning and get to the shore by noontime. It was so cool and breezy. That clean, salt air. Father would dig for clams and oysters. Mother made a big fire and we would cook them in a pot. I would lie in the sand and look at my piano sheet music in the sun. Then nap and dream about becoming a famous piano player. I had such an ambition back then. I practiced my piano every chance I could get. Early in the morning until late at night. Up the scales and down the scales and up the scales and... Well, then we'd pack up and be back home before midnight. I was too sunburned to sleep. I've been playing for days and days after.
Couldn't work on my piano lessons. Nothing.
There's not a note of piano music in the house for a week. Then the next week, we would do it again. All summer long, following the path. Funny. Now that I think about it, we could have saved so much time back then if Father just went to the sea market around the corner from our house. Put a bushel of clams and oysters and brought them back home. Father could have put the clams and oysters into the cooking pot right there. I could have stayed inside and worked on my piano lessons. Cool and happy. My skin would be nice and cool. Mother and Father would enjoy the sound of my piano playing as they enjoy their clams and... And we know that... Stop. Stop this instant. Stop it. What an impassioned you are. You'd be better off locked away. Maybe we should put you on the next ferry over to that Blackwell's Island, along with the other people who are wrong in the head. I'll have your two contact then as soon as... Stop it that instant! Why on earth do you continue to do that, especially here in public?
To shut you up, Mother. For 1 minute, that's all I ask. Stop talking about the heat and piano lessons. You're sending Cousin Harriet. Gertrude McGinty, me, the lovely ladies of the street. You wonder why I stay in my bedroom all day and night, Mother? Why I take my meals to my bedroom and not with you?
Maybe we should not call you Edwina, but Nellie. Why? I'll send you off to Blackwell's Island with all those sick and crazy women.
To get away from you and your piano playing. Day and night, night and day. You pay more attention to your sheet music than me. Even Gertrude, she gets more attention.
I never thought I'd hear this. I must have forgotten to mark this day in my day planner. I must be too involved with my piano play. I must be spending too much time reprimanding Gertrude McGinty. Tuesday, August 18, 1895. My lovely daughter, Edwina Huffington, will forget to mind her tongue in public and in front of her own mother.
Let's return home, Mother. The heat is getting to both of us. The ferry ride will do us all good. It's just too much. Mother, something has stuck itself to the back of your dress.
Perhaps it is what remains of the knife you tried to stab me with your evil words.
No, Mother, it's a note, Mother. Due to the extreme heat, we are closing abruptly for the day. We regret any inconvenience this suddenness may have caused you. Mother, you must have pushed open the door and broken the lock. Intruders!
There was no lock on the door. They are open all hours of the day and all night, 7 days a week. What would they need with a lock? Oh, my. We are intruders. We have to leave at once. If we are discovered, we'll be considered thieves and sent off to Black Rose Island for sure. The intruders' ward. Well, let's leave right away, Edwina. But first, Edwina, be a dear and... Your mother's water, just these water pitchers at each table. No sense letting good water go to waste. No sense parching ourselves on the streetcar and on the ferry back to Brooklyn.
Mother, can I tell you a secret? Something I've never told anyone else ever before.
Are you going to raise your voice to me when you tell me? Be rude.
No, Mother. I'm sorry about how I spoke before. Forgive me.
I forgive you.
Tell me your
secret. I have two secrets. One is my cousin Harriet.
The most delicious secret.
And her brother,
Clem. It seems that Clem was in the woodshed one afternoon,
and the woodman came by to deliver a cord of wood.
Well, Harriet needed some kindling for the stove, so she went to the woodshed only to find...
My mother, not that kind of secret. You know that I stay in my bedroom most of the time I'm at home.
This isn't about my piano playing again, is it? How much more do you want to approach for your mother?
No, but not really. Mother, when you're in the choir playing your piano, the music puts me to sleep.
The soothing sounds of a melody is created by my fingers on the keyboard.
And when I fall asleep, I just dream. The same dream over and over again, most of the time.
The playing of the notes on my sheet music makes you dream.
In my dream, Mother, I'm near a cliff. And there's a wooden walkway going up to the cliff. And there are people lined up on the walkway, waiting their turn. The walkway is whitewashed, very clean. Do you hear my music in your...
Waiting in line? In a dream? Oh, silly, you are, Edwina. Hurry up with my walk, Jen. Let's be going.
They are waiting their turn to jump. Jump off the cliff. In the dream, I go up to someone, a well-dressed woman. I ask her why she's in line to jump. And she tells me that she and the rest of the people are so rich and so much wealth. Oh, I can't explain it. I may have to visit the stream again. But they're so rich that if they have nothing to do that day, they can jump off the cliff into the next day. They pay to jump into the next day. But they're never seen again.
No one can do that in a dream, no matter how wealthy they are. Open a window with your bed, get some fresh air.
And in the dream, I'm a little further away from the cliff. There's another wooden walkway. This walkway is different, broken, faded.
I mustn't forget my piano sheet music.
This walkway is different, broken and faded. It doesn't lead to the cliff, but leads to a pile of dirt and rocks. There are people standing in line just like the other wooden walkway. These people are poor, dirty, unwashed.
Edwina, how vulgar to have such terrible people in your dream. The heat must be sending everyone indoors. There isn't a soul on the streets. We'll be at the ferry and back in Brooklyn in no time.
Just like before, I saw a woman waiting on the rickety walkway and asked her why she's waiting in line. She tells me that the poor people cannot jump into the next day like the wealthy people can.
That's understandable given their low status.
So they line up on the walkway, and when they get to the end, they jump into the pile of dirt and rocks so they can be like the rich people too. After they jump, they dust themselves off and just go on with their lives. What does it mean, Mother the Dream? Every time I sleep, I go back to the same place and see the same people waiting in line. So all I want to do, sleep and visit these two walkways, watch the rich people and the poor people jump off the road at the end of each one. I watch them and I'm so frightened, so unsafe.
I think it means you're eating too much before going to sleep, Edwina. All that food is giving me these strange dreams. No wonder you have that bulbous figure.
Yeah.
And then, when the dream is finished, I slowly become awake. I hear your piano music playing in the park, and I feel safe. Perhaps the next time I want to dream, I rest in the parlor so I can hear your piano music.
Thank you, dear. That means so much to me. The poor widow whose days are drawing in.
Tell me, Mother, which walkway would you choose in my dream if you were in it?
Choose the walkway with the wealthy people, of course. What do you think money is for anyway? I jump right into the next day, fly through the air with my piano sheet music.
Yes, and never be seen again. Well, I'd be in line with the poor people. I wouldn't mind getting a little dirty and a little scraped and dust myself off and go on with my life.
What if you are, Edwina, willing and jerk like that? What an eyesore you'd be. No gentleman would ever look twice at you. Your truth was right. I'll never be the mother of the bride.
Scene 2. The Huffington Parlor, Brooklyn. Fall, 1895. Mother is at the piano, poorly banging away at the melody of Sweet Rosie O'Grady. Harriet sits on the sofa, listening uncomfortably. Mother finishes with a flourish, spins around as Harriet applauds, very quietly.
I know it could have been better, but I just purchased the piano sheet music only a few weeks ago, and I've had no time to practice with all that's going. Did you like it? My piano playing? I know so little about music. You must know we are a little behind the times in East Astoria, in the middle of nowhere. I'm sure it was lovely. Is my coat and hat here, Olive?
I don't know why you live out there. Why it takes you an hour just to get to the Manhattan ferry boat.
You should just tell that husband of yours to shut down that farm of his and move into New York City.
proper. That husband of mine has heard that East Astoria and Long Island City and all of Queens County are going to be incorporated into New York City very soon. When that bridge across the East River is finally built, his farm will be worth a fortune.
Oh, I'll believe it when I see it. The days are drying in, aren't they? Seems like only yesterday that the days were so long and so warm, and I had more daylight to practice my piano sheet music. Now the afternoon comes, the air comes with a chill. It's only hot tea to warm me. The lonely widow. Where is Gertrude with that tea? Gertrude McGinty!
Mother heads towards the kitchen door.
If I catch her outside again behind that stable with that blasted pussy, she'll be on the first boat back to Ireland.
As Mother reaches the kitchen door, Edwina comes in from the other side with a tray of tea and cookies. They narrowly miss each other.
Oh, Edwina, you clod! That door almost hit your poor mother. Put the tea down, Edwina. Just put it down. You did clean Cousin Harriet's coat in the cloakroom, didn't you? You did something right. This is what I have to put up with. You wouldn't happen to have a spare room back on that farm of yours, would you? If only Mr. Huffington was still here, still with us. He died at childbirth, you know. My dear husband, Edwin, I recall. He took one look at newborn Edwina and was at St. Peter's Gates by lunchtime. Oh, Edwin Huffington.
She goes to the tray and begins to pour tea, her bottom awkwardly in the air.
I hope you like these new tea crackers, Harriet. They come all the way from China. Look, they're a bit rich for my taste.
She picks up two sugar cubes and pops them into her mouth.
These sugar cubes keep your teeth nice and white. Edwina doesn't eat sugar cubes, and just look at her teeth. And Gertrude has so few teeth to worry about keeping them white.
There's a door slam from upstairs.
Oh my, look at the hour. If I want to get back to East Astoria before sundown, I'd better...
What the... Is that Gertrude? What is she doing now? Gertrude McGinty, if you have broken my looking glass by slamming that door, you are on the first boat. I'd better go and see what happened.
Stanton hits the stairs, stopping to wave her hand over Edwina to make sure she's breathing.
As usual, lazy, good for nothing. I'll be right back, Harry. Don't you go off rushing to East Astoria just yet. You have to finish your tea.
She's gone up the stairs. Harriet quickly rises and rushes through the kitchen door. After a beat, Edwina wakes, moves from her chair to the piano, where she slowly begins playing a light, simple Chinese melody.
I really must be getting back to the farm. There's work to be done. Edwina, that's just lovely. I didn't know you could play the piano. Mother couldn't like me sitting at her piano. That piece? It's so mysterious. And no piano sheet music? However do you play?
Cousin Harriet, may I ask you a question?
Why, certainly, dear. But don't make it a long question. I'd like to get back to the farm before dark.
Why am I called Edwina? It's not the most attractive name. And again, I'm not the most attractive.
First, you tell me about that music you were playing on the piano. Where did you learn it?
I don't know. Just now, as I was snapping, I had a dream. This music was in my dream.
You dreamt? But you were only asleep for a moment or two. How silly, Edwina.
And in this dream, I was in a wagon of some kind. I was with a family. A Chinese family. Mother, father, a little girl, and an old man.
Chinese people in your dream? How mysterious! And how cramped!
Gertrude McGinty, if I find you, there will be big trouble in this house. I had better not find you smoking tobacco in the linen closet.
We were riding in the wagon to the seashore. It was almost sundown. And when we got to the seashore, the old man got out of the wagon and started walking to the sea. Very slowly. I wondered why he was walking to the sea, so I asked the little girl and she told me.
What did she say?
I don't know. She was speaking Chinese.
Well, that's a lovely story, Edwina. I don't want to be around when your mother finds Gertrude.
Then, a large white seagull perched itself on my shoulder. And the seagull told me that these people, these Chinese people, were When a person reaches a certain age, an old age, the entire family travels to the sea and they watch the old person walk into the sea and never return.
A talking seagull!
And then I looked out towards the old man and he'd stopped walking into the sea. He had turned to face the wagon. He was...
Well, what, dear?
He was crying. He didn't want to walk into the sea. He was afraid.
That's understandable this time of year.
And the family had tears in their eyes, and for some reason, I had tears in my eyes.
You had better not run off with any of my values, Gertrude. I count the silverware.
What about the music, Edwina?
Oh, yes, the music. In the spring, I looked up to the sea and the setting sun. There was a man. A beautiful young man in a small fishing boat. He was far away, but I could hear him very clearly. He was waving his hand to the old Chinese man, calling to him. And suddenly, the old Chinese man stopped crying. The family stopped crying. I stopped crying.
The music!
Oh, yes. The old man turned back to the sea and walked right in the foamy surf, right towards the fishing boat of the beautiful young man. And the sun set right behind them. And they were gone. That's when I heard the music. The music was so beautiful, I wanted to play it, to remember it.
Gertrude McGinnis, get out of my bedroom this instant. Who in the world gave you permission to land on my day? Edwina. Edwina gave you permission? Why, of all the...
You can visit me in East Astoria any time, Edwina. Play whatever you want on my piano. Tell your mother I said goodbye.
Edwina Huffington, I'd like a word with you this instant.
My, the days are drawing in, aren't they? Such a chill in the air. But once your mother was right. Your name was chosen long before you were born. Your mother had the birth announcements engraved and addressed months in advance. She and your father were hoping for a boy, a little Edwin to run about the house, to grow strong and successful, to make her proud. But they received a big, healthy girl instead. Your mother was so very upset. After the shock of losing your father that same day, she didn't have the strength to have new birth announcements printed, so I took the announcements and added an A onto the end of Edwin on each one, gave them to the postman, and off they went. So, I confess, I am responsible for your name.
Gertrude, get your filthy boots off my baby. What kind of house is this? I'm a poor widow, and this is how I am treated. Edwina, I need you up these stairs right now. If only I had a son, not an unattractive, good-for-nothing daughter.
Harriet looks up the stairs.
Pay your mother no mind, Edwina. You are a very attractive young lady and good for something.
Goodbye. Yes, I am.
Edwina stands and heads up the stairs as her mother bellows on. Scene 3. The Huffington Kitchen, Brooklyn, 1896. Crisp, early spring morning. Mother, Edwina, and Harriet sit at the kitchen table. Edwina and mother fold cloth table napkins. Harriet, bored, sips her tea. She has a small bouquet of wildflowers at her side. Two large worn suitcases sit near the table. A large, hand-cranked telephone hangs on the wall.
Finally, I returned home last week after a long day at the Allisons. My voice is right here in the kitchen. Gertrude's having a man's voice.
How interesting.
Edwina finishes folding a napkin into a complicated origami type shape, sets it aside, and then starts on another.
Well, I wouldn't put it past Gertrude to invite some drunken stranger into my house to consume alcohol right in my kitchen. So I raise my parasol above my head and march right in here. And you won't believe what I discovered.
That your parasol would not fit through the kitchen door? You fold so nicely, Mia dear. Is that a bird? Anything would be an improvement over a Gertrude napkin folding. I don't even think she puts her irons in them. She must take them right from the clothesline, crumple them into a tight wad, and stuff them right into the sideboard drawer.
But tell me, what did you find when you entered the kitchen?
Well, Gertrude, of course. And a well-dressed, handsome young man with that.
Oh, Edwina, where did you learn to fold so well?
He told me that anyone in Brooklyn was getting them installed. And they were most convenient. I had to have it. I assigned Gertrude the chore of discovering who's telephoning, then notifying me.
She goes to the telephone.
You see, it works like this. You pick up this and press it to your ear, and a lovely young lady, Dorette, makes it possible for you to speak with whoever you want, and anywhere in Brooklyn. It is quite amazing. It is an invention only for the most refined, you know.
I understand how it works. Where is Gertrude this afternoon? I brought a small bouquet of wildflowers from the farm. They grow wild all over East Astoria. I thought she would enjoy them for the windowsill in her new bedroom upstairs.
I sent her off on an errand in Manhattan, the best in company, to pick up my new piano sheet music. I hope she purchases the correct music and not something fit for a saloon. And she is heading home, that vulgar Lower East Side where she lives with her family, to pick up the rest of her things, then return here. It will be nice to have a live-in housekeeper. She'll be busy all hours.
Ring!
Oh my! It is loud, isn't it? And Gertrude is here. Edwina, discover who is telephoning. It could be a very important person. A mess!
Edwina stands, goes to the telephone, and speaks into the mouthpiece without picking up the earpiece.
This is the Huffington residence.
Mother goes to the telephone, lifts the earpiece, and holds it to Edwina's ear. Edwina takes it.
Sorry. Huffington residence. Hello, Dorette. Who's telephoning? Oh, yes, Mother, it's Dr. Pugh. Do you wish to speak with him?
Mother covers the mouthpiece with her hand.
My, he must not know that I am not practicing. Dr. Pugh is one of the most respected piano instructors in Brooklyn. He would never take me as a student again.
She rushes out of the kitchen. A moment later, terrible piano music is heard from the living room. Mother calls out over the music.
All right, Edwina, speak with Dr. Pugh.
Dr. Pugh, Mother is unable to speak with you. She is too busy practicing her piano sheet music. Yes, I will remind her. Goodbye, Dr. Pugh.
Edwina replaces the earpiece and returns to the table and to folding napkins.
Edwina, I'd like to thank you for coming to live with us in East Astoria over the summer. Our farm is so busy these days. We can use all the help we can get.
The fresh clean air will do me good, second cousin Harriet. Summers in Brooklyn are so very hot.
And you can look after little Dudley. I guess he would be your third cousin if I am your second cousin. And he is the son of Dudley and myself.
She stands and goes to the kitchen door and shouts,
Goodbye, Dr. Pugh!
The piano music stops.
Finally.
Mother enters.
That was close. Gertrude left her phobias last in the car. Lord knows what she does when I'm not here. Wait a minute. Be more careful when you use that contraption. So many refined people may be trying to contact us. You never know who may be telephoning. Everyone from the top shelf of society will be inviting me to a grand ball or a garden party. Harriet, Edwina has her things packed, ready to spend the summer with you out in East Astoria. I'm sure she'll be busy taking care of that boy of yours. What's his name? Little Doug? Like stepping back in time, I imagine. None of the modern conveniences out there, like we have here.
Edwina holds up a second, intricately folded napkin.
I think you mean little Dudley.
Ring!
Hello, Dorette. Who is telephoning?
Hands the earpiece to Harriet.
This person wishes to speak to you, Harriet.
Me? Hello? Yes, I will. Hello? I see. Well, we'll be ready. Goodbye. That was Dudley. He will be here with the carriage by noontime. You see, we have a telephone as well. With all the business we do at the farm, we just can't live without it.
Harriet, let me take you upstairs and show you what I've done with the spare bedroom. Made it ready for Gertrude. She'll be living in luxury compared to that trap her family swaps in now. I'll have plenty of chores to keep her busy all hours. Clean,
the cooking, no time to drink this flask of hers. Come along. You have plenty of time until Deverly arrives. Here, Edwina, put this flask of this in here. Keep it away.
Yes. Edwina puts the flask down and picks up the second bird napkin and pretends to make them both fly through the air. Then she carefully puts the birds on the table and briefly closes her eyes. She picks up the flask. She puts it down on the flask. She goes to the telephone and lifts the earpiece.
Yes, Durant. Yes, I'll speak to him. This is the Huffington business. Yes. Cousin Harriet told me. I could always see it in your eyes.
made you talk about her every chance you got ever since we walked up 6th Avenue during that snowstorm. You were so eager to get home.
Oh yes, the recital of the lyric. The days are drawing in.
Oh, Gertrude.
My dear Gertrude.
Let's go to the party, Mother. You can play your piano, sheet music for us. I can take a short nap and dream. Perhaps I'll dream about Gertrude. And you.